where we're going in this particular unit of information is we're going to talk about, we're in that third ring, which corresponds to the rite of passage age, you know, that teenage rite of passage. We're also talking about, at this point, what we call the Southeast Shield. And the Southeast Shield is related to vitality, that energy in the body. So the question we're asking, in a way, when we start to frame this, is what gets teenagers into vitality? There's a lot of ways to access that. There's a lot of ways that that happens naturally among teens if you let them alone and let them sneak off and do their own thing, which they will do anyway, in spite of your best efforts. It's part of their instinct to differentiate, so to separate with their own gang, and then get into hilarious mischief, which activates that attribute anyway. So they pretty much take care of this on their own, hopefully safely. We're never too sure. But in this case, we're going to look at a particular cultural element that is ubiquitous throughout traditional cultures, but it's also ubiquitous in modern times. This stuff's going on everywhere around us all the time. And it's, let's just say, it's in plain view. You may not have thought about it as an element of culture that can affect and influence connection effectively, but it can. And you're all familiar with it if you had the experience I did in school, where the gym teacher would kind of get everyone in the space, because it wasn't always a room, sometimes it was outside, would kind of gather everyone in this mob and say, start counting off by threes, right? One, two, three, one, two, three, right? One, two, three, one, two, three. And then, okay, all the ones over here, all the twos over here, all the threes over here, and sometimes you didn't even know what you were about to do. Raise your hand if you remember that experience. So you were thrown into what in anthropology they would call a moiety. Moiety is a funny word. It basically means sort of non-specific groupings. You know, and so a moiety is different than, say, a guild. You know, a guild, if you grew up with your grandmother was the herbalist for the village, you might grow up with herbal knowledge, and so now you're part of a specialist guild. It's not non-specific random grouping. Does that make sense to you? So you can have groupings within cultures that are specific to a responsibility related to a specialist role. But you can also have groupings with responsibilities related to almost random distribution, random groupings. So a larger sort of anthropological viewpoint on this, moieties of relational belonging. So in gym class, you belong to the one group for 45 minutes, right? But think about what that does. And think about what teenagers tend to do. They tend to click. And clicking isn't necessarily a healthy thing. All if you leave it untended and it's only clicking, then people fall into these very specific groupings that almost become insular. And then they develop an internal group identity, which is almost like nationalistic, and then it becomes a very sort of outwardly judgmental, us versus them kind of energy. And that also boils up at that time, that stage of life. So if you think about it, instinctively they know they need to differentiate themselves from parents, from other identities. They need to segregate themselves away. They need to clump up and find safety in each other. This is part of their hardwiring. They know, and they also, by the way, become nocturnal. Did anyone ever notice that before? People think there's something wrong with my teen. They're lazy. They're staying up too late. They're sleeping too late. But actually, biologically, there's an actual proven neurological phenomenon going on where they're literally shifting to nocturnal for a little while. And that nocturnal shift is part of their need to go into the unknown, in a sense, with a group of co-adventurers. Now, if that is well handled in a traditional culture, the elders know this is coming, and they meet it head on, and they prepare for this, and they take them on nocturnal adventures in specific groupings. But you also you'll see them leveraging this, you know, non-specific relational grouping things to disturb the tendency towards cliquishness, the us and them insular behavior, right? Because if you don't check that behavior, then you can actually believe yourself. You know, if it goes unchecked through your teen years and you go into young adulthood, then you start to identify with a group of people, and then you sort of have anti-identity energy towards other groups of people that are different from you. So by stirring that up with these non-specific groupings, activities, setting things up, well, those of us in the environmental ed field or, wilderness adventure guide field, whatever that might be, whether it's wilderness therapy or just leading kids on, you know, rites of passage camping experiences or outdoor rec, we get to do a lot of, count off by three type stuff. And you get to see with your own eyes the power of direct observation of taking children who don't know each other and putting them into a group and then giving them an activity. So experiential education is filled with this practice. You know, you think about ropes courses or initiative games played by Outward Bound or, you know, these various projects that do team building activity. They're working this particular cultural element very, very effectively and, building trust exercises. And there's all kinds of things that can be done with that. In our book that is related to nature connection modeling, Coyote's Guide to Connecting with Nature, there's a zillion games at the end of the book that allow us to work in these small clumps. But the idea being that if you're responsible for mentoring youth on a long-term journey, so if you're a parent or an auntie or an uncle to young people, to recognize that it's good for them to be placed into these non-specific random groupings and given responsibility for a period of time within that. You know, and the rite of passage is a really great example of how that's done. In rite of passage, the basic formula for it is that young people are separated out from the village, so they're literally taken away from what they know and those who they know. They're placed into a place that's different and separate from what they're used to. They're initiated with knowledge and skill. You know, they're sent onto some kind of ordeal. Then they are integrated back into the village. So, you know, separation, isolation, initiation with knowledge or skill or behavioral responsibilities, whatever they might be, and then the reintegration back into the village. And these things are done best in these groupings of people who may not know each other. Our friends down in LA have a daughter who's going off to an organization called CROCA. If you've seen Mother Nature's Child, the documentary that I'm in, that Richard Louv is also in, that's produced by Fuzzy Slipper Productions out of Burlington, Vermont, they have a whole section on CROCA, and they talk about young people in that rite of passage, and they bring them out on these adventures. They go on these canoeing adventures through these deep wilderness areas, and they come back in and have to come back into society with a whole new set of tools. And what are these tools? You know, if you're familiar with mythology, I want you to think for a minute about the Irish legend of Finn of the Fianna, and this classic story of this young boy who's raised in a particular way in nature, who is given a tool from his father that his father received during his rite of passage when he was initiated and separated, and he went into the underworld to get this tool. And this tool ends up saving the day in the story. You know, if you've looked at Joseph Campbell, Hero of 1,000 Faces, or followed Michael Mead's work, this story is the same. There's a certain point on the journey, the quest to individuate as an adult human being with responsibility, where we have to go on this underworld passage or down into the adaptive valley. And on this journey, we have to face ourselves, we have to go into the darkness, we have to find things down there, and something from our ancestors comes and meets us there, and we receive this tool. And then we bring this tool back up from the underworld, and then that aids us to be functional adults, and we bring that back into the world. This is what the instinct is driving. How to become a responsible leader in the adult world is what that initiation into adulthood is about in these traditional cultures. In Western times, we don't really have an equivalent for that, which is really a big deficit, actually. You know, I've been fortunate and blessed, first of all, to have been brought on one myself, but second, for the last 33 years, to have been in the position of actually having to do that for others, you know, in the wilderness. And I've seen the effect of this on the leadership of those people when they come back in and integrate these tools that they gather from this deep connection journey back into their lives and the power that that brings. In all cases, it's always been a group of people who were non-specifically related to each other. You know, it was always a moiety of people or multiple moieties of people. And the moiety thing, though, is highly developed in Australia among the Aboriginals. They actually have language rules where, you know, you have to know what moiety someone belongs to even know how to address them. So they have different ways of speaking to different people in different moieties, and they have to learn these responsibilities from a young age. So they've developed this system, and this one man who is doing this, bringing back traditional cultural ways through arts and music and through wilderness experience, he's bringing it back to youth in modern times. And a lot of these youth grew up in the school systems where they weren't allowed to receive their culture, so he's trying to restore the culture through this practice, this arts and music council practice. And so he basically made these, you know, those rubber bands that you can stretch over your hand and get onto your wrist, and you see them, and they usually have words imprinted on them or whatever. And he basically came up with a series of colors and a series of letter codes so that when he meets people from the Western world, he asks you questions to figure out what moiety relationship you have. And then he gives you the right colored band to either put on your right wrist or your left wrist, depending on which moiety he figures out you are from asking specific questions to you. And that way, he can address you in the way that he's required to. So he's actually using this in modern times, you know, with visual regalia to actually identify who's in what moiety. And you have no idea what he's talking about, but I remember getting a yellow band on my left wrist. So that's what moiety I'm in. I don't even know what it means. But then he knew what name I should call him by, because he has multiple names depending on what moiety I'm in. So I have to address him with one particular name because I'm from this moiety, and that's his name to this moiety. So you can see the Aboriginals have taken count off by fours to a much more refined degree. But what ends up happening is the whole moiety thing links to the songline culture. And the songline culture is how across the entire continent of Australia, Aboriginal people from different language groups and different specific cultural practices and different ecosystems can all agree how to take care of the land as a giant treaty network. So they use the moiety thing as a way of communicating and agreeing about taking care of the land for the future generations. So I found that to be the most complex use of moieties. You know, because here I have no blood relationship or cultural relationship with my friend Wanta, or Steve Patrick as his English name, and yet he was able to use this sort of non-specific grouping almost as simple as count off by eights or fours, right? But there were certain characteristics he was looking for, and he could tell by those characteristics that that meant I was in this moiety, and then he was able to distribute that and spread that. And that's one of the things that he's doing with moiety. So, you know, you can see that that's all around, but it's really quite literally as simple as counting off by twos and threes. And when I'm doing connection work in modern settings now, and I'm really trying to enhance connection, it works really well to put people into groups of two or three. For people in groups of two or three to go off, have an experience, and then come back and talk about it with the larger group, and to have a spokesperson from each of the groups of two or three to speak to the whole group. This is a really powerful model, and it's all based on moieties, you know. We run a program called Village Talk by telephone every Tuesday, three times a day, depending on what time zone people are in the world. They know what call they can call in for. When people get on the call, we use the Maestro Conference to break them into moieties. We put them straight into little groups of two or three. They usually have one person who's a little bit more experienced who acts as a facilitator. Then that person reports back to the document, then we all read this Google document. So we're actually using moiety inputs in this Google document to read what people are talking about on the questions of the week. And then we call on that group to harvest from one story from all the people by knowing which story most meets the needs of that call today. But that's an example of how we're leveraging that ancient technology of non-specific groupings and feedback into bigger groupings. Right? We call it the in-breath, out-breath, which will come up in other parts of the 512 project. But basically, literally, the culture breathing out into small groupings, breathing back in through spokesmanship, back into the big group. And this in-breath, out-breath is the heartbeat of a healthy culture, right? So that's moieties. And I know it's a strange word, but it's definitely worth working with, breaking people into small enough groups where the surface area is enough that each person gets a chance for their voice to be heard, I think is pretty critical within that structure. And, we might call it small group breakouts. And then knowing to harvest from each of those groups that each voice is heard, that's also really key, I believe, that each voice needs to know that they're heard. And then within those moieties, what we basically call conduct agreements, that when we get into this small group, we're going to play volleyball. The ones on this side of the net, the twos on that side of the net on this court. Here's the conduct agreements we have. These are the boundaries, right? Here's how we serve. This is where we serve from. Here's how we rotate. That's basically, moieties are almost always associated with a set of conduct agreements that set up the activity. And you can literally look at it like that. And then everyone is left to explore their own expression within that set of conduct agreements. And of course, as you remember from volleyball, rules are broken, and then everyone goes, hey! And then there's some feedback within the system, and then, okay, do over, or whatever. Or that didn't count, and then there's some governance process that usually links to conduct agreements. But this is a really essential practice for a healthy culture, that small breakout, conduct agreement stuff, activities within that, harvesting back from it, coming back to the main group, the in-breath, out-breath. And that obviously, those of you who are teachers or educators, that this works really well in classroom settings. Any time a group of people needs to take something within themselves to give them the responsibility and some basic conduct agreements to go into small breakouts is a really healthy way to do that. This is a practice, random groupings that is used again, worldwide, modern times, and at all different levels. But it's also really an ancient part of our human culture. So that's moieties.